I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are writer and culture critic Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney Arsalan Iftikhar, Republican strategist R. Clark Cooper, he's also an Army Reserve captain, and NPR political editor, our political junkie Ken Rudin. All of them are here in our Washington, D.C. studio. How fun is that?
Take in away, the Jimmy. Place to be. Thank you, Michelle. Hey, fellas, welcome to the shop.
Yeah, thanks
hey,
a lot.
Hey,
yeah,
hey.
I'm really, really excited to be here.
he took his Xanax this morning.
too much.
Which came in the mail.
Right. Let's get it started. You know, the Postmaster General made an announcement this week. The service is cutting most mail deliveries on Saturday. Now, that's good news for people that are sick of catalogs, but bad news if you were hoping for your weekend Netflix movie, right, Michelle?
Well, you know, I don't know if Netflix is covered because the post office says that they'll still deliver packages on Saturday. So I don't know whether this Netflix count as an envelope or is it a package. But anyway, I think a lot of people know this by now, that the post office has been dealing with a huge debt issue for some time, about $16 billion, just about $16 billion. And Postmaster General Patrick Donahoe said that the Saturday changes will take effect in August unless Congress acts to block the move, which could happen because a lot of people are arguing about whether they actually have the authority to do this.
So. Right. Thanks, Michelle. You know, Ken, this is something of a political football. How do you see this playing out?
Well, this has a lot to do with my male ego, and I think I want to get that right away. But you know something? I know they're talking about politics, but it only makes sense. I mean, if they're losing $16 billion a year, I don't know anybody who goes to the post office anymore anyway. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember the last time I anxiously awaited something in my mailbox. I mean, of course, there are a lot of people who rely on these things, but if it cut $2 billion, $2 billion in savings? I mean, why not? I think making it a political issue doesn't make sense to me.
Why not? You know, I think there's a good reason. You know, Michelle, you know, they're one of the largest employers of people of color in America. You know, it's one of the last places that that black people could get a job without having to have a whole lot of or any higher education. So to me, this is going to disproportionately affect people of color and women, by the way. So I think that's a good reason. You know, I want to see Obama. I want to see the president get involved. And do something. I do. Yeah, right now. Because it's disproportionately going to affect people that look like me.
But Jimmy, this is bigger than the Postal Service. We're starting to see the tip of the iceberg on entitlement benefits that are tied to federal service. So DOD, the Department of Defense, is going to be facing this issue. You look at budgets, budget busters. Are what are retirement packages, which everyone's entitled to. People have worked for those. But you look at benefits for veterans, benefits for civil service, and, you know, the Postal Service is a civil service. That is why they finally had to come and look at the bottom line and say, look, we can't afford 7-day or 6-day delivery. We have to do 5-day because we have to pay out benefits. Those benefits are due to retired postal workers. This is just the beginning of what we're going to see being addressed about services from the federal government. And the states and counties have had to do this already.
I dig it, you know, but you got the postal jobs are getting hit. Federal jobs are being hit. Both of these are jobs that a lot of people of color hold. And I don't know. It's time for Obama to cape up and do something. Arsalan, you got it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting that, you know, you hit the nail right on the head, Jimmy. You know, a lot of people of color, African Americans, Asian Americans, many people that I know.
Women.
Immigrants, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in this area, you see that this is a way for people who are relatively recent immigrants who do qualify for the work, I mean, obviously, to get a rung into the middle class. It's steady, consistent work with benefits.
I think that, you know, in the last few years, if we have been able to bail out private corporations, you know, the argument could be made that we could bail out something that is a quasi-governmental agency.
But we have been bailing it out. Haven't we been bailing out the post office for years?
Well, but not to the point of solvency. I think that if you're talking about the billions of dollars, you know, they're saying that this would save $2 billion. How about, you know, raising the postage rate to
You know,
if I could finish my sentence, what I was trying to say is, you know, you raise it significantly, raise it to 60 cents or 70 cents for a stamp.
It would be a dollar to cover this deficit. The stamp would have to be a dollar to cover this deficit.
Well, and I think that many people, you know, when I was a teenager in the mid-90s, it was 29 cents and now it's almost 50 cents. So I think that, you know, it's something that that many Americans would be willing to do, especially if we would be able to, you know, keep hundreds of thousands of jobs, because this would be a staffing thing. If you're cutting post office hours on Saturdays, that means that it's going to be less hours for people who work there. I think, you know, these are some things that need to be considered.
Can I ask this question? Isn't this a philosophical issue, though, about whether the primary role of government is to provide service or to provide employment? I mean, because they're not the same, because those are different policy directives, right? If you say the primary purpose of government is to provide jobs, which is in part about social stability, that's different from saying our primary role is to provide a service.
It's service provision. This is where you're going to get into some ideological differences.
Yeah.
But government, the federal government as designed, was not supposed to be a jobs program. There are jobs that were developed because services needed to be provided and people were paid for those services. Benefits developed over time because they were part of what was considered standard or expected. But let's remember that government services are paid for through tax revenue, or they're paid for by a direct actual payment for that service. And so there are employment positions that come with that.
Well, I just think it's interesting, though, that when you talk about cutting – and I'm not taking a position here, but I'm just saying when you talk about cutting defense spending, what do the lawmakers in that area do? They talk about the jobs. They don't talk about the service that they provide. They do somewhat talk about the service they provide, but in fact, even allegedly conservative lawmakers, when it comes to cutting defense spending, what's the first thing they talk about? The jobs.
Right, the bases.
So there is – all I'm saying is nobody's clearly consistent on this issue.
Ken talks about bases. There's been a BRAC-type discussion, a base realignment discussion with the Postal Service. So before we reach the point where the Postmaster General made the announcement of reduction of delivery days, there was already a fight in Congress about the parochial nature of which post offices are being closed in my district. And there's some interesting corollaries of what's happening with the U.S. Postal Service and what we're going to see happening on a bigger scale with the military.
Let me ask, Kendall, where's the public on this?
Well, I kind of think, first of all, I mean, as I said, I don't know people who rely on the post office as they used to. In the end, we haven't even mentioned email. The fact that email has replaced a dollar, you know, the thought of putting a dollar stamp on a letter, I don't know anybody who would do that. I mean, fewer and fewer people do it. It's not like,
I
understand.
Do it.
What?
I do it.
Do you go to the post office?
I do.
Mail
the
yes,
things that
absolutely.
I do.
I stand in line.
I do. And absolutely. Also, I manage my elderly mother's affairs and – you know, I go to the post office all the time to manage her affairs. She's not on email. I'm not going to send her digital music. I mean, I'm not going to.
But the post office will still be open on Saturday. You just won't have delivery, so you still have those. You still have be able to have those services. That won't change at all.
What was interesting is that there was a poll done that showed that 7 out of 10 Americans apparently support the stopping of Saturday services, which I found to be an interesting
poll. Which is interesting, and also because unusually, the U.S. is actually unusual with a complex economy of having 6-day mail delivery among industrialized
countries. I remember as a little kid, 2-day.
You were a little kid?
I was. In the,
he still is. What are you talking about?
66. Bill the Conqueror, Billy and I were. But I remember 2 deliveries a day. How do you like that?
Oh, interesting.
Oh, right. Well, there was also evening newspapers back then.
Right.
I mean, milk delivery.
And now newspapers are slowly evaporating. So,
the next incarnation of the show will be Tell Me Less.
Oh, nice. Nice. The door is over there. If you're just joining us, you're listening to our weekly Barbershop Roundtable with writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney Arsalan Iftikhar, NPR's political junkie Ken Rudin, and Republican strategist and Army Reserve Captain R. Clark Cooper. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. All right, well, let's move on to a bit of a heavier topic. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has laughed along with a lot of the fat jokes people have told about him, including me. He did that on Letterman earlier this week, but he had enough after a former White House doctor who made a serious comment about his size. Michelle, we got some tape.
No, yep. We do. You know, CNN asked Dr. Connie Mariano. She served in the Clinton and both Bush administrations. Actually, she was a guest on this program after she wrote a memoir about that experience. And she was, I don't know if she was asked, or I don't remember whether she was asked or she just volunteered her thoughts about the governor's weight. And obviously people are thinking about the governor, who's extremely popular with a lot of constituencies, as a potential presidential contender. And this is what she said.
I like Chris Christie a lot. I want him to run. I just want him to lose weight. I'm a physician more than I'm a Democrat or Republican, and I worry about this man dying in office.
Mm. And for the record, she is actually a Republican. But Governor Christie responded during a press conference on Tuesday. This is what he said.
My 12-year-old son comes to me last night and said, "Dad, are you going to die? I mean, come on. This is irresponsible stuff. If she wants to get on a plane and come here to New Jersey and ask me if she wants to examine me and review my medical history, I'll have a conversation with her about that. Until that time, she should shut up.
Wow. Thanks, Michelle. You know, the doctor struck back. She said it doesn't take a physician to observe that he's overweight. And it's sad that he chose to personally attack her like that. But, you know, I'm of two minds of this. First of all, I think he should have put her in her place. It's not really her business to diagnose him on, you know, as a soundbite. I think that was all wrong. But the other piece of this is a serious issue. He has a right to have these discussions with his family, with his own physician, and he obviously takes all the good-natured ribbing, you know, in stride. But when you're on TV talking about, he looks like he's about to die. I think that's another level of comment, and I think he did the right thing. That's just me. Ken Rudin, your thoughts?
I agree. It reminded me a little bit when I heard her diagnosis of him. It reminded me a little bit of Bill Frist, who said from afar. Remember when Terri Schiavo was that woman in on tubes in Florida, the brain dead woman, mm-hmm. who said that he should be kept alive as a doctor. Of course, he didn't examine her at all. He just said this as a political point of view. But at the same time, I think if you look at him, I mean, he should be. I think they have a new show for him. Wait, don't tell me. I mean, seriously.
Ken Rudin, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Boom, boom.
Take the veal. Try that. Please, take the veal. You look at somebody like that, and your heart goes out for him, but to say that I think he could die in office, I think I agree with you, Jimmy, completely, that this is taking a step too far.
What do you think, Clark?
Well, when I was serving Governor Jeb Bush, Governor Huckabee was also serving in Little Rock, and that's when he was about the same size as Governor Christie is today. His role as governor wasn't impacted by his weight, and he lost his weight later. And he has said since this issue has grown that, look, you know, I lost weight for my own personal health reasons. I didn't do it out for political reasons. Now, maybe he did or didn't, but his guidance or his feedback to Chris Christie is if you want to lose the weight, you do it for yourself. You know, don't feel pressure to do it. And look, his approval ratings in New Jersey and outside New Jersey are at an all-time high still.
Okay.
So,
Arsalan,
the man can do the job regardless of what his weight is.
Arsalan.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think this is the most redunculous story of the week. I think that, you know, at the end of the day, we have to remember that, you know, President William Howard Taft was about 335 pounds. You know, Warren G. Harding, you know, was overweight, was a diabetic, was a smoker, and died while in office. I mean, we as human beings can die at any moment, and to say somebody is quote-unquote too fat to, you know, hold an office, I think, is as repugnant as someone.
But wait a second. All things end. You know, I mean, if we're going to comment on Hillary Clinton's ankles or Michelle Obama's bottom, I think Christie's waistline.
I don't think anybody here is commenting on ankles
or bottom. But not lately. Making an important point. The fact is there are people who have felt that they could comment publicly upon the First Lady's figures, particularly Michelle Obama. A sitting member of Congress made a public comment about her figure. Okay.
Right. But
so it's
what I'm saying is I don't think anybody has ever said that Hillary Clinton's ankles are too fat to be president of the United States.
But the fact is, if he's running for office, the fact is people are making this evaluation of his fitness for office anyway. And I don't mean that in a pun intended. I think that you all make some important points. I mean, why is it that people who are of large size are like the last people in America that we're allowed to just comment upon without any, you know, with no compunction or repercussions,
Absolutely.
Ken Rudin? But despite that, if you're running for office, people are going to evaluate your fitness for office
sure.
in any metric that they choose. And I think that people do have questions.
I'm having a vision right now of Barbara Jordan, one of the most beloved, respected people, male or female, in the history of American politics. She was vastly overweight. I don't remember anybody making a joke about Barbara Jordan's weight.
I don't remember that it was such an issue back then. People used to smoke. Public officials used to publicly smoke because people didn't realize, or it wasn't discussed, just how significant a health issue it was. And also, I'm just saying, back then, people didn't realize what a significant issue, health issue, excess weight can be.
Well,
I just think that our awareness of it is different. And the job of being president is different from being a member of the House of Representatives. It just is.
Right,
that's the context we're discussing.
Michelle, the problem with armchair doctors, my father's a doctor, the problem with armchair doctors is that, you know, they have not examined Chris Christie. They don't know his family history. They don't know his medical history. He could be as healthy as a horse on the inside. So to, you know, make an armchair doctor decision from 2,500 miles away is pretty irresponsible.
And let's remember what is required and what's not required. I'm the only one sitting here in the barbershop that has a physical requirement to maintain employment with the Department of Defense. I each year, in fact, believe it or not, I don't think I look fat. I am fat by Army standards.
Clark, you're very fat.
Yeah, well, thank you, Ken. Yeah. So, yeah, Ken and my colonel agree, but there's this thing called a tape test. You get tape. Yeah. They tape your neck. They tape your chest. They tape your waist. Chris Christie doesn't have to take a tape test or a weight test to be governor or be president of the United States. And let's remember, the Nats have just added Taft to the running presidents. We now have five. So, you know, Taft is in.
Okay, well, it's the leading edge of a conversation that's going to be had. I mean, I'm just saying, just being on the reel about it, the fact is people are having this debate, and he's going to need to face it. That is just a fact. Just to clarify one point, Dr. Mariano was asked about this. She didn't just raise it, you know, willy-nilly. I just thought it'd be important to point out it. Before we let you go, I've got to ask you guys what you think when you hear this song. We don't have too much time to talk about, but here it is. I'll make love to you like you. So that's Boys to Men. They performed in Russia earlier this week, and some Russian journalists have written that the concert was one of President Vladimir Putin's zany plans to increase the Russian birth rate. So really, this is just my excuse to ask you all, you know, which is your favorite Boys to Men song? So Arslan, I'll start with you.
My favorite Boys to Men song?
Yeah. How about maybe this way? Do I really want to ask this? Like, what's your favorite, you know?
Romance song?
Yeah, there it is.
It got really
quiet
in the barbershop.
I know, right? Well, I guess my favorite romance song would be Fade Into You by Mazzy Star.
Okay.
Because, number one, it's called Fade Into You, and number two, it's Mazzy Star.
You got one?
Yeah, mine is from Lady Antebellum. It's Just a Kiss, and it's a song special. My guy who's deployed right now, that's an important song for us. He's back in Afghanistan, so
yeah,
that's our song.
We're thinking about him. We're keeping a good thought for him. Ken, you got one?
Mine is the theme to NPR's Science Friday.
Jimmy, you got one?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Massive Attack, and I like the remix album, Massive Attack versus Mad Professor, and the cutoff that I really love is No Protection.
Okay, so, all right, well, let's start the weekend off right, and we'll play the song No Protection on our way out. I can't believe I'm even saying that word, but anyway. Jimmy Israel is a writer, culture critic. Ken Root is NPR's political editor, our political junkie. R. Clark Cooper is a Republican strategist, a captain in the Army Reserve. Arslan Iftikhar is a civil rights attorney and founder of TheMuslimGuy.com, all here with us in our Washington, D.C. studios. Thank you all so much.
Peace.
Clark is not fat.
Hua.
No, he's not.
Yep.
And remember, if you can't get enough Barbershop Buzz on the radio, look for our Barbershop podcast at the iTunes store or at NPR.org. That's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.